KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Stockton, California.
I live next door to Bob Saget.
Selma.
Rockridge.
Tracy, California.
Noe Valley.
Coming up, the Golden State Warriors are wrapping up their final regular season in Oakland.
Let me just say that for 47 years, Warriors fans have stuck with us through thick and thin.
It's beautiful, it's bittersweet, and we've got lots of stories to share with you in the debut of the original KALW podcast, Bounce.
There's the buzzer. The Golden State Warriors champions once again. Back-to-back titles, 3 in 4 years.
Emotionally, we can't afford to lose them. Come on, man. This is Oakland.
The drama is on and off the court, and we've got it covered starting today right here on Cross Currents. Well, the Golden State Warriors' regular season ends tonight. It's an exciting time. The playoffs are about to start, and the Warriors are the two-time defending NBA champs. But it's also a bittersweet year because this is the team's last season in Oakland. Now, they're only moving across the bay, moving to San Francisco, but still, it's different. And if you live around here, you know what I'm talking about. So this is a moment we've been waiting for, and tonight, on the eve of the final East Bay run, we are launching a new podcast. It's called Bounce, the Warriors' last season in Oakland. And to tip it off, I'm joined by our news director and the host of Bounce, Ben Trefney. Hey.
Hi, Hannah. I heard what you did there. Mm-hmm. So Hannah, have you been to a pro basketball game?
I've never been to one.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Wow. Well,
I know.
Let me take you there.
Okay.
We're at Oracle Arena in East Oakland for one of the greatest shows on earth. There's 20,000 people pumped. Right before the game starts, all the lights turn out in the arena, and then the hype music kicks in. Flames shoot out, fireworks go off, indoors. A bunch of synchronized lights start to spin all over the crowd. They're roaring. Four guys on the floor wave giant flags while more than a dozen dancers move, and then they introduce the starters, 5 all-stars, literally a team of the best players in the world. And they're just bouncing and dancing, and everybody's having the best time. It's a scene. And that's before the tip-off.
Ooh, so the best players. Let's talk about that cast of characters. Who is it?
Well, yeah, this is a legendary team, like the Avengers. And the Warriors' core is all players who've played their whole careers with the team. It starts with Stephen Curry, the baby-faced assassin.
I know him.
Okay. He's the 2-time most valuable player, who many say he's the best shooter in the history of the game. And off the court, he's a family man with 3 kids.
We're both supposed to, you know.
Get to work, Daddy.
I know. Hold on 1 second, okay?
Be quiet.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, that's Riley Curry. And then there's Klay Thompson. Mm-hmm. He's a great shooter, great defender. He doesn't say that much, but when he does, it's often pretty funny. And he's got a bulldog named Rocco.
It's just nice to have your pet. You know, they bring you a lot of joy.
Okay, so that's Klay Thompson.
That's right, Klay Thompson. And then there's Draymond Green, a real tough guy who does whatever it takes to win games. He's one of the most outspoken players in all of basketball.
We did it. And it's our league, and we run this, and we did it for the Bay, and we're going to do it again for the Bay, because we rep the Bay, Bay Area's team.
Yeah.
We run this.
All right.
All right.
Okay, Draymond Green, we know he's a talker. Who else?
Okay, so since the Warriors started their run of success, they've also picked up a couple of other stars. Kevin Durant, he's a near 7-footer who's one of the top scorers in basketball history. Mm. And he's an interesting guy, pretty open, and he seems to wrestle with a lot of his feelings right in front of us. And DeMarcus Cousins, he's coming off a blown Achilles tendon. And he's a big guy, like 275 pounds, and he's one of the best centers in the game. Also, one of the moodiest on the court and most generous off the court.
Moody and generous. Okay. So after all that, how successful is this very eclectic team?
Yeah, well, it's worth saying, Hannah, most of this year, they've just been kind of up and down, really not dominant. But just a few years back, they had the most wins in a single season in NBA history, and the most wins over two seasons, and four seasons, and five seasons, and if they win tonight, six seasons. I pay attention to sports, and pretty much every single night, they lead the national sports broadcast. They're a phenomenal team, and they're a publicity juggernaut, and they use their fame. The players and Warriors coach Steve Kerr speak out about politics more than most athletes do, about gun control, sexism, racism. And when athletes win championships, they traditionally go to the White House, for example. But when Donald Trump took over as president, Stephen Curry led the team in saying they weren't going to go.
Yeah, I remember that.
The things that he said and the things that he hasn't said in the right times, that we won't stand for it. And by acting and not going, hopefully that will inspire some change when it comes to what we tolerate in this country and what is accepted and what we turn a blind eye to.
So that's all interesting, but what's especially interesting to us here this year is that now that the Warriors are extraordinary, they're leaving the town that loves them.
Mm-hmm.
They're heading for a brand new billion-dollar arena in San Francisco, and we know it's the highest-rent city in the world. And they're leaving their sellout crowds, and some would say they're leaving their soul behind.
So let's stay on that. It's really upsetting for a lot of people, huh?
Yeah, it's very upsetting, and it's really disruptive for a whole lot of things, cultural, economic, and this is all coming together under the pressure of the playoffs, which could last a few weeks or it could last a few months, depending on how they do. But however it ends, it is the last season in Oakland.
All right, so you got me pumped about this podcast, Ben. I can't wait to hear it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And now the debut of KLW's Bounce.
The Golden State Warriors just held their last regular season home game at Oracle Arena in East Oakland. It was close, and then it wasn't. The Warriors absolutely blew out the LA Clippers in the third quarter, capped by the fans' favorite player, Stephen Curry, adding to his highlight reel.
Makes this.
Three! Oh, Steph hit it from the Bart Station!
That right there, that's why he's one of the most popular stars in the world. Such good theater. This is Bounce, a podcast about the Warriors' last season in Oakland. I'm Ben Trefney, and throughout the playoffs, we'll take you to the Dubs games. That's what the fans call them, gotta say it. And we're also taking you behind the scenes. This is not just for sports junkies. We're talking about the lives this team impacts and what it means for them to move. From the players.
Once everything is done, you're gonna look back on this building and see so many great players who walked through here, so many amazing moments, and to win a championship on this floor, something I'll remember for the rest of my life.
To the writers.
Even though they went down the tubes for a while, the fan base has stayed very strong.
The fans.
Yeah, I feel like Warriors are a part of my family. I can say that, yeah. I don't miss a game.
And the people making a living off the team.
A lot of people up here hustling, and it's honest work, it's hard work, it's not easy. That's going to be gone. A lot of that's gone. Then what are people going to do?
It's about sports and a lot more than sports. Ready? Let's go.
But let me just say that for 47 years, Warriors fans have stuck with us through thick and thin.
That's Golden State coach Steve Kerr after that last home game. He's known for having the best winning percentage in NBA history and for having a sharp wit.
And let's be honest, most of those years have been a little thin. But we got some good stuff going on right now. But I can tell you.
Kerr talked about how great Oracle Arena is for basketball and about how great its employees are, too.
I want to say a special thank you to all of our arena employees here who do an amazing job.
And on behalf of the team, he introduced a blue and gold banner that would be hung in the new Chase Center next year. It's a massive flag that says Oakland, California, 47 years. It was a nostalgic moment, set up by the coach who's led the team to its current and unprecedented success.
There's the buzzer. There's a new dynasty in the NBA. The Golden State Warriors champions once again, back-to-back titles, 3 in 4 years.
But long before the big names of today's super team came along, or there was ever such a thing as Dub Nation, there's the story of a franchise that didn't even begin in the Bay Area. Bo Walsh has more.
Nobody knows more about the history of the Warriors than Art Spander. The longtime Bay Area sports writer has been covering the team for more than 50 years.
I moved up here in 65, and I told sports editor, Art Rosenbaum, then at the Chronicle, hey, I covered the NBA, and I started following the Warriors. I was the beat man, and I remember, you know, all their wins and all their losses.
But the gallant Warriors' bid runs out, in spite of a battle that is not decided until the final seconds.
The Warriors moved to the West Coast in 1962. But the franchise was founded in Philadelphia back in 1946.
And the Warriors will take time out here in Hershey, CBS Radio in Philadelphia. If you know anybody not listening, call them up. A little history you're sitting in on tonight.
They were the Philadelphia Warriors. They come here. Philadelphia gets a new team, and they call it the 76ers.
The Warriors moved west when a local radio and television producer from San Jose named Franklin Muley bought the team. He'd make San Francisco their new home.
He was not what you consider today's modern owner. He was sort of a mom-and-pop operation, not with the big money, and there was no TV like there is now. And he'd come by, and to get you to write nice things, he'd bring you fresh vegetables. And he was one of the first guys to grow a beard. And he wore a deerstalker hat.
I've been accused of that before, of not looking the part. But I'm not really sure I know what the part is. Yeah, well, what is the owner supposed to look like?
Cedric Port is the owner and a major personality in his own right here in the Bay Area, Franklin Muley. There he is in his latest Sherlock Holmes hat.
I started wearing a hat, and it seemed like every time I wear the hat, we'd win. I've been wearing a hat ever since.
Muley was also a partial owner of both the San Francisco Giants and the 49ers when he acquired the Warriors in 1962. But nobody here seemed to care too much about basketball during that time.
There was no interest in pro basketball, and it's hard to imagine in today's world the way basketball was treated. Right after World War II ended, the only three sports that mattered in America were baseball, boxing, and horse racing. So, pro basketball was so small, there wasn't any interest.
The sixth game of the World Championship Final takes place in San Francisco. Philadelphia in the dog jersey leads 3-2.
Despite making the NBA Finals in 1964 and 1967, the Warriors struggled to draw audiences, and they couldn't find a permanent place to play in San Francisco.
They played games everywhere. They played them at what is now called Billy Graham Civic Auditorium. They played games at University of San Francisco, USF. They played some games at San Jose Civic Auditorium, which 4,000, 5,000. They played like 10 games in San Diego.
The San Franciscans keep it sizzling, and another perfect shot.
The Warriors played the majority of their games at the Cow Palace, located on the border of San Francisco and Daly City.
Welcome to the historic Cow Palace in San Francisco.
But it wasn't exactly built for basketball.
All right, gang, we're going to be back here in the Bay Area at San Francisco's Cow Palace on Saturday night. There's going to be a midget tag team bout on this sensational card.
Cow Palace was built for animals. I mean, it was built for the stock shows. The atmosphere was not real good because it was built for rodeos and without any real fan following. The Warriors drew poorly. Wasn't like now.
Back rim, no good! And the ball game is over! And the Warriors were deprived of what...
Muley did everything he could to build interest in his team. He even came up with the idea for the classic Warriors logo featuring the Golden Gate Bridge, known as the City, which is still popular today.
They were the San Francisco Warriors, and he was very Bay Area-oriented. And the logo, the real logo was the City. He said, everybody knows who the city is if you live around here. The cable car on the front or on the back with the number in it. So it was very, very San Francisco. And, of course, now it's become historic. And now we have the town. And now every other community and place where an NBA team has some sort of a nickname. And they basically, that's because of Franklin Muley.
Eventually, Muley found what could be a permanent home for the Warriors across the bay.
The Oakland Coliseum Arena and the Coliseum were not built until the mid-60s, so they couldn't play there until then. Up until the mid-60s, if you said, I'm from Oakland, where's that? Across the bay from San Francisco. Now people know where Oakland is.
And by a program of conservation and correction, Oakland had the courage to dream and to plan, and more improvements are on the way.
The Oakland Alameda County Coliseum Arena, or what's known today as Oracle, opened its doors in 1966, making it the oldest arena in the NBA. And by 1971, the Warriors would officially call it home.
At the Oakland Coliseum Arena, 13,000 fans come to their feet. Their favorites, the Golden State Warriors, are about to be introduced to this standing room only capacity crowd here in Oakland, California.
But with the team still playing a few games on the schedule in San Diego each year, Muley wanted to adopt a new franchise name, one that suggested that they represented the entire state, similar to what the California Angels were doing in baseball.
And they decided to call them Golden State, which is a mythical place, of course. Open up the Golden Gate in California, the Golden State. But there is no literal place, Golden State.
The Golden State for the big money. And it is that one. The ball, it is over. Look at this crowd in Oakland. They are going wild. Yeah. They are mobbing their Warriors.
Then over the years, Dave Newhouse, particularly, who wrote for the Oakland Tribune, kept saying, you got to change the name to Oakland. They play in Oakland. But once they started winning championships, I don't think it mattered what you call them. People knew. And the name is unique.
It's all going Golden State's way. And the little team that could seems to be doing it one more time with their backs against the wall. Listen to the crowd. High fives all around.
That story was reported and produced by Beau Walsh. So, the playoffs start this weekend, and even though the Warriors are the top seed in the West and two-time defending NBA champs, there's some new drama.
Curry fell down. I hope he's okay.
Stephen Curry tweaked his right ankle in the second-to-last game of the season, a game that seemed pretty meaningless otherwise.
Oh, gosh. It's hard to look at that.
We'll see where things stand next week, and we'll take you to the bridge between the Coliseum BART station and Oracle Arena, where there's a whole economic situation set up around game day.
I'm selling beer and water. That's what I do. I don't have no job, so this is how I make my living.
Really? You're all living off this?
Exactly. Pays the bills.
That's coming up next time on Bounce.
That was the first episode of the new KLW podcast, Bounce. The theme music was made by Daoud Anthony. And you can subscribe to Bounce wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to keep it rolling until the final horn in Oakland. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. We were just talking about some of the places that the Warriors have called home, like San Jose and San Diego. And our next story is about places like that that have Spanish names. While California was born from Spanish origins, it doesn't allow Spanish language accent marks on state IDs. Same goes for our Bay Area neighborhoods and street signs with Spanish names. No accent marks. But why? Well, reporter Carrie Spivak was curious, so she went looking for California's lost accent marks, and she explored how we pronounce the name of one very particular San Francisco neighborhood.
You've just given birth to the most perfect little human. You name him after your father, and his father before him. On the birth certificate, you spell it just like it's always been spelled, with an accent mark over the I. Then, Giselle Sanchez comes along.
I see the accent mark, and the first thing I do is tell them, you know, everything looks good except the accent mark, and I'm really sorry I can't use that.
Sanchez is a birth recorder at St. Luke's California Pacific Medical Center in San Francisco. She helps parents with their babies' birth certificates. But not every name will do. California has rules. Accent marks are not allowed.
Last name Hernandez, and there's a little accent mark, which unfortunately we couldn't use. We've got another couple here from Russia. They wanted to name their baby Eneas, and I pronounce Eneas simply because the accent mark is there. But unfortunately, I can't use that either.
This affects a lot of Spanish names, as well as German, French, Estonian, Polish, Russian, Turkish, and more. Something like an accent mark might seem like a small detail, but it tells you how to say a name right. And Sanchez says, for some parents, it represents something more important.
It's removing their culture, who they are. My son's name is Julian, not Julian.
Accent marks are missing all over the Bay Area. Many neighborhoods and streets are named after Spanish explorers. Some of those names once had accent marks, but now, without them, we don't know if we're saying them right. Listen to the different ways these residents pronounce the name of their neighborhood in San Francisco.
The Portola.
I call it Portola District.
The Portola.
Portola.
The Portola District.
This name once had an accent mark. When it disappeared, the original pronunciation went with it.
The people in the 1920s that came to this neighborhood pronounced it Portola.
That's Reina Garibaldi, a San Francisco native born and raised here. You know the Slim History book with the old photo on the cover that you see in a lot of neighborhoods? She wrote it. According to the book, immigrants from Italy and Malta and Jews from Europe settled here in the 1920s. Their pronunciation,
Portola,
caught on. But that pronunciation is now fading away.
Now, people that come here new from other parts of the city or other countries say Portola.
Garibaldi is talking about people like me. I say Portola. That's how I've always heard it pronounced. But after talking to Garibaldi, I started to wonder about Portola and how it should really be pronounced. To find out, we need to look into our California history. Don Gaspar de Portola was a Spanish explorer. Historians believe he discovered the San Francisco Bay in the 1700s. He was also the first governor of Spanish-ruled California before it was a state. After the miners struck gold and San Francisco rapidly grew, most people living here didn't know about Portola. And those that did forgot about him.
This piece of California history was a little bit obscure in the back pages of the history book, so to speak.
That's John Freeman, a local historian. He says that in 1909, San Francisco quickly rebuilt itself after the big earthquake and fires. It wanted to throw a five-day carnival to relaunch the city as a destination for business and tourism.
They were searching around for a theme, a set of colors, and something to hang their festival on.
They settled on the 140th anniversary of Portola's discovery of the San Francisco Bay and called it the Portola Festival. Suddenly, San Francisco was enamored with Portola. In postcards advertising the event, he looked rugged, with wavy hair spilling out from under a plumed hat, a sash over his shoulder, and a long sword by his side. But as talk of the festival spread, a vexing question emerged. According to Freeman, the chair of the festival committee was giving a speech when he pronounced Portola three different ways.
One of the principals of this particular meeting says, "Excuse me, sir, how do we pronounce the name? We need to officially decide how we should pronounce the name."
The organizers began an extensive search for Portola's signature. Dispatches were sent to Spain and Mexico. They wanted to know if and where he put the accent mark in his name so they could pronounce it right. In the meantime, how to say Portola went viral in a 1909 way. Letters poured into the San Francisco Call. One of them suggested that the pronunciation be decided by a game of dice. Another newspaper joked it should be porthole. And then there was the verse, like this poem called Lost Accent, published in the Chronicle.
"For my nerves were racked to pieces, and I felt an awful jar when I heard the mispronouncer say my name was Portola."
Only days before the festival was to officially open, a Stanford academic discovered a cache of Portola's letters in Mexico City. He said,
I have looked at the documents. He had an accent at the end of his name, so the name should be pronounced Portula.
Finally, how he would have pronounced it, with the accent and stress on the A. The long-lost accent, Portola. But just as quickly as it was discovered, it was gone. Newspapers couldn't print the accent mark.
Having a font with an A accented was a rarity in anybody's print box.
Today, in the Bay Area, there's no accent mark on any of the signs that bear his name. Not on neighborhoods, streets, schools, or even the city named after him, Portola Valley.
Encarnacion, accent mark. Jesus, accent mark. Colon, Lucia.
Like Jose, Giselle Sanchez has Sanchez, seen, there Perez, still aren't any Chavez, accent marks on Californian names.
Hector?
Today's young explorers can speak their names into voice recorders. But unlike Portola, they will never have official papers to show where their accent marks should be. So, if we can learn anything from Portola, it's to put your accent mark wherever you can. You just don't know if you'll wind up in the history books. In San Francisco, I'm Carrie Spivak for Cross Currents. They call me Hal. They
call me Stacey. They call me Hal. They call me... Carrie was a fellow in KELW's Audio Academy, where she learned all about making radio stories just like that. And you can too. Applications for our Audio Academy are now open, and the deadline to apply is this Sunday. Go to kalw.org and find all that information. And while you're there, make sure you're signed up for the Cross Currents weekly newsletter. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.